welcome to another program of Savoir Faire. My name is Magali Farrugia and I will be your hostess during these programs. This program is being brought to you by the History of Art Department, University of Malta, under the coordination of Dr. Giuseppe Scambri-Bonacci, who is also the Artistic Director of the MDINA Contemporary Art Biennale 2015. The series will be focusing on exploring design and designers. The topics will be extremely varied, from luxurious objects and famous designers to everyday objects. You can also view images of the objects that we will be discussing during the program by accessing a website built specifically for this program. The website is as follows: www.melfarrugia.wix.com/savoirfaire. That's www.melfarrugia.wix.com/savoirfaire. Wix.com is spelled wix.com and savoirfaire savoirfaire. This can be accessed through your mobile phone as well. All you have to do is go to the Programs tab and click on the program number accordingly. You can also find us on Facebook by searching Savoir Faire, and I urge you to like us. And also to like the Campus FM Facebook page, which you can find at Campus FM 103.7. Welcome to program 11 of the series. Today we shall be discovering more about interior design with the help of our special guest, the interior designer Carmel Spiteri. Carmel, how are you?
Okay, thank you. And you?
I'm okay. I'm always very excited for every program. So, thanks a lot for accepting the invitation to join us for the program, first of all.
My pleasure, my pleasure.
And maybe we can start by getting to know more about you and how you started in this industry.
Well, basically, as the late Antoine Camilleri, the distinguished Maltese artist, used to say, I like to label myself as the eternal student, because life, obviously, is since even before we are born till our last breath, is a learning curve. I practically had the normal upbringing and the normal standard of education, as most of the Maltese had. I was fortunate to be brought up in an artistic environment surrounded by relatives who were decorators and builders of fine architecture. My father, though, insisted I should study science as I would die of hunger if I pursue art. I heeded his advice, obviously, but used to attend the School of Art in the evenings. It was, at that time, the next block down the road from the Lyceum at Hamroun. My master there was Esprit Barthé, and there were others, Samuel Bujeya, Harry Alden, Anton Ajous used to teach sculpture. So, together with this natural inclination towards art, I started on the right footing. Then after our A-levels, which included pure and applied maths and physics, most of my friends in my class at the junior college at the time, it was situated at the Evans building all the way down in Valletta, some of them and I joined Air Malta, and I worked there for many years as flight crew. Obviously our dreams, our projections changed, as we had been all geared up to join the engineering or architecture courses. Air Malta was practically a new concept and attractive and adventurous for us to join. The National Airline gave me a golden opportunity to travel and to overcome the sense of insularity and the tight family protection. Still, between flights, I managed to follow several courses. I think it is essential to leave ourselves open to information, whatever it is. In my case, what I learned came in handy as I could one day start my own business as an interior designer. This was obviously a gradual process. It was a complete change from being a flight purser, but I never looked back. But this learning process was never broken. Most of the courses I attended were related to arts, interior design, architecture, conservation. Actually, I am presently reading for a master's degree in the history of art. with a dissertation which discusses the architecture of 18th century country villas in Malta.
So, let me start with the obvious question. What is interior design? What do we understand with this term, interior design?
Well, interior design is a profession which combines several abilities as creativity, technical dexterity, the sensitivity to existing fabrics, and to the client's needs, obviously, so that a safe, functional and appealing environment is created, usually in an interior space. This could be a domestic, industrial, hospitable, religious, or an office environment. Obviously, man has to be kept at the center of all this. One has to master several technical abilities to perform well and achieve good results. These include surveying, both land surveying and quantity surveying, drafting, a good understanding of materials and how they perform in different situations, a sound understanding of structures. One has to be conversant with sanitary laws and regulations, color and lighting, which go together and they can make or break a project. And then the ability to sketch, especially in front of the clients, to explain better what you are pointing out. And this is a great asset and the clients love it. These are also all essential to give clients a good and a pleasant result.
Do you consider interior design to be a modern trend, or it's something that has been going on for many centuries?
It has been going on. Men always felt the need to live not just in a functional interior, but, for example, cave art indicates that he went a step further. He wanted to be surrounded by art in his intimate spaces. This need to embellish our living environment has been going on at least since then.
So we had to start from the prehistory. What examples can we mention?
Well, I think we should keep to the Maltese context. We have the prehistoric remains, and specifically what comes to mind now is the Halsaflin Hypogeum and the spiral decoration. This was obviously, as you know, a space hewn out in the bedrock. Then there are obviously the mosaics at Juno Heights in Marsa Schlock, the Domus Roman and Rabat. There are the medieval frescoes of Halmir Liri Bil Miftuch. Preti in St. John's Co-Cathedral gave us the complete work of art where architecture, painting and sculpture create a homogeneous interior environment. Of course, other works of art were acquired before and after Preti at St. John's. Then there are the palaces of Mdina, Birgu, Valletta. All this indicates that interior design was sought after throughout Maltese history. Many times, both the designers and the craftsmen were commissioned from Italy or Sicily to execute works. A fine example that comes to mind now is Palazzo Parisi on Nashar. So it's an embellishment for the self and for the gods. Then, closer to our time, it was the leading artists. They used to be called painters at the time. As Enving Ramona and Frank Portelli, and others, obviously, who also worked as interior designers.
And nowadays, function also plays a major part, I guess.
Well, currently, function is maybe given more importance. Design is conditioned, obviously, by the lifestyle. People are spending less time in their houses. When back from work, it is essential to come into a comfortable home, easy to keep clean, and to perform the house chores with the least effort possible. Obviously, the safety factor should also be given the importance due. But function is not a new concept. In the period we label as the Renaissance, many treatises had been written, and some are still being followed nowadays. The Renaissance humanists, or oratori as they used to be called, looked back at the classical period, especially at the remains of the Roman Empire, with special focus on the writings of Marcus Vitruvius Pollio. This Roman architect, probably active during the time of Julius Caesar, emphasized the rules required to create good architecture, and these are still valid today.
Can you explain these rules to our listeners, perhaps with some examples?
Well, after 2,000 years, the work of our architects still reflects that these three essential guidelines, as indicated by Vitruvius, are still valid. These were firmitas, what we now refer to as sound structure. Obviously, whatever we construct should retain itself without collapsing. It has to be structurally sound to withstand also the weights of furniture and people living in the buildings, what we call the life loads. The second word is utilitas, is what you have just referred to as function, so that each room we live in has to accommodate the people living in it, to perform specific functions as cooking, eating, resting, sleeping. All these functions have to be done in relative comfort. And the last one is Venustas, a derivation from Venus, the beauty of architecture. The current term being used is aesthetics. Architecture has to please the observer, and the different structures have to look good even when built one against the other, as for example in a streetscape.
Of residences. How can we define the urban residences and the suburban residences?
Well, there are several types of houses which we live in. People live in apartments, maisonettes, terraced houses, villas, some even live in palaces. They all basically have rooms with specific functions, as we all cook and eat and sleep. Others have more than one residence. The one they live in during most of the year and another one for the summer months, probably close to the sea. Well, some 200 or 300 years back, the well-to-do used to have a house for each season. I discussed this topic in my dissertation. The urban residences were the palaces built within the walls of the cities of Birgu, Mdina or Valletta. In Valletta, obviously, they could enjoy the theater and the opera during the winter months. And then the suburban country villas, which used to include a formal garden, which could be enjoyed during the spring. There is a concentration effect of these villas in the three villages of Attart, Halbalzan and Hallia. And then closer to our time, there was the Villa Marittima. A fine example for Palazzo Spinola in St. Julian's or Villa Ciberras in Bighi, now in ruins. Some then owned property in Rome or Florence, so their life was always on the move, probably with an entourage of servants. There could also have been the Villa Rustica, in the Palladian sense, where the residence in the country was surrounded by farmland, which was worked on industrial levels. A local example could be Palazzo Testaferrata, which still crowns the hill of Tashbish. Obviously, this does not have the architectural majesty of the Palladian villas in the Veneto.
And for those following us on the website, you can find some examples, some images of these various type of residences that we just mentioned. And I remind you, you can find these images under program number 11. And I remind you, you can find the website at mel.farrugia.wix.com/savoirfaire. And you can also access this through your mobile phones. are the main differences between the interior design for the rich and the persons of high status in society compared to the lower classes?
One finds the basic furniture in all houses, or most of them at least. And the houses of the higher strata of society, these would be made maybe of a better quality and more luxurious. Grandeur could also be a characteristic of the upmarket residences. These would have larger rooms, luxurious bathrooms. And then there are the different finishes. In one, for example, you can find a cheap kind of tile, while in the other, the floors would be paved in marble or expensive parquet. Technology also plays an important part, an important role in these houses of luxury. Things would be controlled, as we say, by a touch of a button. Houses would be more comfortable to live in, with controlled temperatures. With the increasingly better standard of living, some things are better afforded by most nowadays. Owning a prestigious residence is a statement as owning a car of luxury or a boat. These are status symbols. It has always been like that. It was the same in the older times, where the houses of the nobility and the knights, for example, were built by visiting military engineers or a Maltese capomastro of a certain ability, while the other structures were more vernacular, perhaps more rustic, their development more organic and not planned in an ordinary manner. One can know the difference, for example, between the villas in the three villages, which we mentioned earlier, and the abutting residences. Villa Francia in Hallia, with its magnificent scenographic external stairs. Villa Gorjon, austere, obviously, but built high on the narrow road and exhibiting a sculptural heraldic arrangement, which used to be polychromized. Then there are the Testaferrat and the Depiro palaces all over the place. These were all built using mathematical proportions, so that the architectural elements, as doors, windows, cornices, relate one to the other. And some we know that the proportions applied were the same as those of Palladio, in fact, so that it was not just a statement of wealth and power, but also indicative of their cultural and intellectual levels. These were the elite, and lived as their counterparts in the courts of France. They used to import stuff for their personal requirements, even.
And what would you say the situation is nowadays with interior design?
Well, since the time of Henri Cremona, Frank Portelli, Esprit Boite, the demand for interior design was steady on the increase. Times have obviously changed, and there are clever and creative designers who are producing good design also in Malta. Some are young, others not so young. There are design-related courses nowadays, and the dedicated staff at MCAST are doing a marvelous job. More materials are now available, obviously, and suppliers have invested in the latest technologies. So all this can make your dreams come true when it comes to interior designs. Sources are more at hand, not just for the designer, obviously, but also for the clients, especially with the easy access to internet. One has to be careful, though, not to cut and paste. One should look, see, digest, maybe adopt and adapt. Because two great design ideas could break each other down if placed in one context. And unfortunately, we are witnessing this in some cases, these exercises of cutting and pasting, which are not doing the profession any good. One would be able to say, because more often than not, these projects lack when it comes to detail. Miss van der Rohe, among others, used to say that God is in the details. But for inspiration, one can look at nature. Design is all over nature. We have to teach ourselves to observe. History is also important. We have to know what others did before us, what their problems were and how they sorted them out. So it's not a case of venting the wheel every time we have a problem. It is unfortunate that society today has very little time to think, and thinking and self-criticism are an essential part in the design process. Some clients come with preconceived ideas, and this could make the job slightly more difficult, obviously if they stick to their guns. Sometimes I feel we have lost the rhythm. I remember walking past building sites when I was younger, and could see and hear the Nadjar dressing the Maltese limestone. They kept a rhythm, tup, 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 tup. And if I passed by days later, I could hear the same rhythm. Now, in almost one generation, even the tools of the builder have changed, and also the building materials. Instead of the Manaret, there's the bandsaw. It is faster, and less stone is wasted. But even when using this machine, one can hear the motor being stressed as if fast is not fast enough. Obviously, the use of computer programs have made life easier to all. Presentations to the client are faster and more true to life.
This was really very interesting, Carmen. You mentioned Nadjar. Maybe you can give us some more information about this?
Well, the building trade, you used to have a team of workers. There used to be the mastru, obviously the owner, the contractor himself. He used to lay stones one on top of the other using mortar. The person who used to do the mortar himself, tattain, he used to mix the powder from the Franca stone, ishash, with a bit of cement and maybe sanji in some cases. And then the stone dresser, who used to cut the stone to size as required. Obviously, the contractor used to use the pal, which is like, if you can imagine, a very large nail, maybe 60 centimeters long, and used to beat the stone so that it stays in its place, and while using, with the other hand, using the level so that the surface of the stone and the face is level. And the Nadjar used to have the Manaret. I'm talking about, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, maybe even more. The stone used to be ready cut from the quarries. They used to get truckloads. And obviously, at one point in time, while doing one course, you will need a shorter or a small piece of stone to fill in the gap, which would be left by the other stone slabs. So the Nadjar had to used to cut the stone to size. If it's a bit long, he used to use the Manaret to cut maybe a couple of inches off, and then hew the stone with the same tool, so that this will be orthogonal, like 90 degrees, but all surfaces having 90 degrees one to the other, basically. And then one thing that bothers me in this trade is that there seems to be a lot of wastage. We're not sensitive that, or aware that this lovely Maltese Franca, which is still available today, is limited in quantity. So, because we see places being built, houses being built, and then knocked down a few years later, maybe 20 years later or so, and then we throw everything away. Obviously, it's expensive to clean the stone and reuse it, but this could be done. Because if we keep on doing this, I mean, we'll end up with no stone for our restoration in maybe 50 or 60 years' time.
Carmel, thanks so much for joining us and for all this information. Next week we shall meet Carmel Spiteri again to continue discovering more the subject of interior design. for joining us. May I remind you that these programs are available on the Campus FM website, which is MaltaUniversityBroadcasting.com, and you will be able to find all the past programs from this website. And this program was brought to you by the History of Art Department under the coordination of Dr. Giuseppe Scambri Bonacci, the Artistic Director of the Mbina Biennale 2015. And also, for more info about the Biennale, you can visit www.mbinabiennale.org. See you next week!